Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Raia Drogasil conference call to discuss the results of the year 2016. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.raiadrogasil.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find the slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will only be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of Raia Drogasil management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Raia Drogasil and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Marcilio Pousada, CEO, Mr. Eugênio Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Marcilio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of the fourth quarter 2016 Raia Drogasil. As always, Eugênio will present the slides, and I will stress some points after Eugênio, okay? Then go to Q&A. Eugênio, please.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Raia Drogasil 2016 conference call. The year was outstanding for the company from whatever perspective we look at. Here we have some of the key numbers that summarize the performance. We ended the year with more than 1,400 gross stores in operation around Brazil. We opened in the year 212 stores, so this is 12 stores more than the guidance we had provided for the year. We closed 27 stores. Gross revenue reached 11.8 billion, 25.5% revenue growth with 14.3% same-store sales growth. Our gross margin reached 29.6%, 60 basis points better than the previous year, while EBITDA reached 987.6 million reais, and a margin of 8.4% and a 50 basis points improvement versus 2015. Adjusted net income reached 499 million, a 4.2% net adjusted margin, and an increase of 28%. Finally, this was the fourth consecutive year of positive free cash flow generation. We generated 35 million in free cash flows, and after paying interest on capital, after paying interest over debt, we had 107 million cash consumption in the year. On page four, we can put the numbers of the year into a longer-term perspective. I think for me, what the message I get from this chart is the capacity that this company has of growing at a fast pace while creating sustainable value. The compounding capacity of this business is tremendous. In 2007, when Drogasil came public, Raia and Drogasil had 1.8 billion in combined EBITDA. We added, sorry, in combined revenues. We added 10 billion of revenues ever since to reach 11.8 billion this year. Our number of, we had 410 stores back then. We now have more than 1,400 stores. All this growth was done with tremendous margin improvement. as we have a record high EBITDA in 2015 and a nominal EBITDA close to 1 billion reais. So I think we still think the best is ahead. We still think we can create tremendous value for them. Our vision, as you know, has been leading the consolidation of the drugstore industry in Brazil. And I think the numbers on the chart, I think they point to the success in delivering the vision. We reached an average market share last year north of 11%. So we gained, as an average for the year, 100 bps in market share. Obviously, for the fourth quarter, it's much higher than that. So, but you see that it's a very consistent market share growth. When we look at the next group, the number two to number five companies in the market, as a group, they once had 21% of market share. They now have 16% of market share. Obviously, this is not a linear performance across the group. You have one company specifically that is in very bad shape that aggravates these numbers. But I think the message here is that we are completely detaching ourselves from the pack in terms of total scale and in terms of revenues per store, as you can look on the right. There's a very big gap in revenues per store, so none of the other new contenders have the kind of cost structure that we have. In a fixed expense business like this means we have much better dilution than the others. So this is competitivity in the end of the day. And finally, before getting to the details of the year, if you compare, this is the fifth year, of the merger. And we can see the kind of progress we were able to make. Obviously, the initial years, as we all remember, were very painful, very challenging. But once we got on track, once we concluded integration, the results have been remarkable. We increased the store base by more than 80%. We increased revenues by nearly 150%. The number of employees increased 57% only. EBITDA grew more than 200%, and we expanded our ROIC by 8.8 percentage points, and it has reached 21.5% last year. And obviously, if all stores were mature, the number would be much higher than this. So now getting to the details of the year. On page 7, we opened last year 212 stores, and we closed 37 stores. I think it's important to break down those closures. I would say we had 17 stores closing, of which I would consider business as usual. And then we had another 10 stores that were more like one-timers. I mean, they were restructurings that we pursued. We bought a company in Goiânia in 2013 named Santa Marta. I think we had bought something like 25 stores back then. They were very important because of presence and market share in Goiânia. But we felt that in some neighborhoods, we went too far in terms of store density. So we decided to close 6 stores this year, of the acquired ones, so that we could better redistribute our revenues across existing stores and increase our revenue per store and our margins in the operation. This was successfully done. So these are kind of one-time closures. And also with Farmazil, as we concluded the pilot, and as we now have a clear strategy of rolling it up, starting in São Paulo, we feel that it doesn't make any sense to manage at this stage in the game a decentralized portfolio like we had. We had stores in the countryside of Paraná. We had one store in the countryside of Paraná, one store in Belo Horizonte, 2 in Rio, 2 in Goiânia. So we decided to close the stores, but which we could not adequately manage, to be able to focus in São Paulo, to be able to start our expansion. So those were 4 stores being closed. So 10, I would say, they are kind of one-timers. 17, they represent kind of the expected pace going forward, I would say. Here on the right, when we look at the current portfolio, 34.7% of our stores are still undergoing maturation, with very high percentage of first-tier stores. So this is the highest, the greenest portfolio since 2013. So today, we can discuss our geographic presence and market share growth. I think the first message here is, obviously, São Paulo is a very important and meaningful market for us. We have more than 800 stores in the state of São Paulo. This year alone, we added more than 100 stores in São Paulo, and we think this is great. But we already have a very meaningful presence outside of São Paulo. So if you look in the Northeast, for example, which is a very new market, we're just in the beginning, we already have 98 stores there. We have more than 100 stores in Rio. We have 137 stores in the South, something like 140 stores in the Midwest. And another important thing is that this year, on top of adding new stores to those existing markets, we will also enter three new states. We are at the same time expanding the network and increasing the density in the markets we compete. We achieved in the fourth quarter an amazing comparable market share of 12.5%. So the market share on a national basis grew 2.2 percentage points in 1 year. This is a comparable figure. So all the new informants that IMS just started capturing, they're out of the game here. The actual market share number is 11.8, which I think is a really good number, and a really fast progress over the previous year. In São Paulo, the comparable market share went up by 300 bps, from 21.9 to 24.9. What's happening here is, first, it's the effect of 100 new stores on the board. So this is very meaningful. The mature store portfolio, despite cannibalization, is doing also well. So this is another thing. And we saw this year competitors closing stores. We saw Onofre closing something like 15 stores, and we saw a small player named Draga Verde closing in more than 34 stores. So this is a consolidation is happening at a very good pace, and we're very happy where we are. And we think we still have a long runway ahead of us, even in the state of São Paulo. Then in the south, in the southeast, we increased from 6.9 to 8. In the Midwest, 12.9 to 13.7. In the south, 5.5 to 6.5. And in the northeast, we doubled the share from 1 year to the other, from 2.7 to 5.4. We are still in the beginning. We think we could have in the northeast similar share to the one we have in the Midwest, for example. Okay. On the next page, we reached 11.8 billion in new revenues, of which 11.5 were Hydro Brasil, and 356 million were for Bio. So the consolidated revenue growth was 25.5%. What's important here is that we added this year alone 2.4 billion in new revenues. So this is like, this is more than the size of the number four company in the business. So the magnitude of the scale gain that we're able to post every year is very, very meaningful. So we are progressively decoupling from our competitors in terms of scale. Hydro Brasil grew 24.3% in the year in the retail business and 23.3% in the fourth quarter. For Bio, grew a staggering 92% in the year and a staggering 81% in the fourth quarter. So the numbers we have for Bio are better than any expectation we ever could have. And obviously this has an impact on the value of the option to buy the remaining 45% of Bio. And when we discuss the net income, we see an effect from this performance in our numbers. In terms of product mix, I think the best way to summarize this is that everything pharma is doing very strong and is doing very well and very consistent. So Branded Rx grew 25.1 in the year, 25.9 in the quarter. Generics, 24.2 in the year, 26.8 in the quarter. So generic was the highlight of the quarter. We started to see very good generic numbers kicking in. OTC, similar numbers, 25.1 in the year, 24 in the quarter. And then, what's different is HPC. HPC is not in the same level. I can hardly call it a problem because we're talking 22% annual growth. But in the quarter, mainly due to a very strong comp base of last year because of Zika, because of insect repellent sales, it was in the past 17.6%. What's also happening in HPC is that in our core categories and the value-added categories, and actually those are the ones everybody was worried about, we're doing brilliantly in skincare, in hair care, and so on, in cosmetics. But then, where we are struggling to some extent is on basic categories, where customers are more price sensitive, there is more cross-channel competition, so it's been somewhat tougher there. But still, the aggregate numbers are good, and obviously, pharma is performing at a very high level. The bar is very high, even for HPC track. On the of the 23.3% revenue growth in the quarter, 13.2% was same-store sales at the retail level, 8.1% mature-store sales growth. The calendar effect here is positive 0.3%. Then, page 11, our gross margin for the year expanded by 60 bps, mainly due to the inflationary gain on inventories that took place in the second and third quarter. And when we look at the fourth quarter, we gained 10 bps of gross margin. The cash cycle, which also related also to buying gross margin, was flattish versus last year. We reduced 0.2 days of cash cycle. So we think this is a good number. We significantly reduced cash cycle in the previous 3 years. And I think maintaining the cash cycle level, we think it's a very good performance. So when you look the whole year, we saw an expense pressure of 20 bps, which was fully concentrated on sales expenses. G&A was flat, and G&A would have been diluted if not for specific pressures of the fourth quarter. So, going to the fourth quarter, in terms of sales expenses, we achieved a 40 bps dilution. So the fourth quarter was in line with the third and second quarter of the year. What happened here is that because we opened our stores in a very balanced way through the year, with 46% of them being open in the first semester, those stores had the time to break even, had the time to start generating profitability to the level which they are offsetting the expenses from the new stores that came around in the second semester. So as a result, because we have so many stores generating cash, and last year at the same point in time, only a small number of stores was at that stage, the book had been opened in the second semester, we had a big pressure from store opening. So 60 bps improvement this quarter versus same quarter last year. On top of that, 4Bio, the mixed effect in the 4Bio growth diluted another 10 bps of sales expenses. On the other hand, marketing, rentals, and store closures, each has pressured by 10 bps, and there the aggregate qualities effect. In terms of G&A, we had an increase of 30 bps, of which 20 bps were due to higher provisioning of variable compensation, and 10 bps was due to a peak in labor contingencies. So we think there is a 30 bps effect here that is transitory, and we expect to get back to the normal level already in the first quarter of next year. On the variable compensation side, what happens is a combination of two things. First, this was a tremendous year, so we are paying very high bonuses for a good reason. But then there is another effect, which is the outstanding shares we have granted in previous years. When the share price goes up, our provision has to be adjusted by that. So we are paying, to some extent, the cost of the we're bearing the cost of the share price increase over outstanding shares granted but not vested. So this effect was a very meaningful issue. As a result, EBITDA for the year grew by 50 bps, reaching 988 million on a consolidated level, and in the quarter we gained 10 bps of EBITDA margin. If we assume only the 1,208 stores we already had operating on December 31st last year, and we attribute to those stores the full logistics and G&A expenses, meaning not considering here the cost of the stores open, the losses on the stores open through the year, gross revenues obviously would be lower, 11.4 billion versus 11.8, but EBITDA would have been 1.17 billion, and the margin would have been 8.9%. This is only to illustrate the cost of opening stores on the current year performance. But if we look at the fourth quarter, the contribution margin of the new stores opened for the first time ever was positive by 3.2 million, because a lot of stores are open early and have enough time to start making money and to more than offset the cost of the stores being open the second semester. Then, comparing the two businesses we operate, Hyper Brazil, which the retail business reached 970 million of EBITDA, with an 8.5% margin, 702 million of EBIT, and an EBIT margin of 6.1%. For Bio, did a very good 17.3 million, a margin of 4.8%. But the EBIT margin was 4.8% also. So there's very little, depreciation, because the capital is very low, and so the EBIT margin is also very high here. So Bio is a very efficient business in terms of return on invested capital, and I'll briefly provide some numbers on that. Next page, adjusted net income. When you look at the full year, we have been flat at 4.2%. When we look at the quarter, we had a 50 bps margin pressure. Of the 50 bps margin pressure, 10 bps was due to higher income taxes, so higher EBITDA, higher taxes, and 40 bps was due to higher financial expenses. Of these 40 bps, 10 bps is actually interest accrued. 30 bps has to do with FOBIO. And here it's important to understand how FOBIO is accounted for in our numbers. Because we had a call on Andressino shares, and he has accrued on us in 4 years, what happened is that we consolidate FOBIO, and we consider every FOBIO is 100% ours. And then we recognize as that the value to be paid for the remaining shares. And because the performance was so good, what happened is that we redid our projections. We're not expecting to pay more than initially, and as a result, this difference is reflected as an interest expense. So this is a non-recurring effect. So there is a 30 bps for bio pressure here. And finally, we had 7.7 million of non-recurring expenses that we have adjusted from our numbers. So we have restructured our career programs to change the salary grids so that we can optimize our expenses. And in order to accelerate the transition to the new structure, we have 7.7 million in severance. The severance is fully provisioned, and it relates part to the fourth quarter, part to the first quarter of this year. Then we have restructured the stock portfolio in Goiânia of the Santa Marta stores that we acquired, and a pharmacy as well outside of São Paulo, as I previously mentioned. This is a 3.9 asset write-off, non-cash effects. Then we are transitioning the higher loyalty program to a different one, and there is a cost to even the transition. We have also provisioned for 3.8 million. And finally, we have 7.8 million positive net recoveries from previous years, which is basically on the tax side. On page 15, we generated positive free cash flow for the fourth consecutive year. And I think it's really amazing that a company that is growing as much as we are, a company is over 200 stores, we opened up to 212 stores this year, from versus 156 the previous year. We were able to generate enough cash to pay for our full capex. So the operating cash flow was 524 million. Stemming from 750 million is also operation minus 200 something million from working capital. So operating cash flow 524 million. We invested of 48.9 million, leaving 35 in free cash flow. The total cash flow is negative because we paid 153 in interest on equity, plus 27 million, also related to interest on equity, but these are taxes that go to the government. So we're talking 180 million income, interest on equity. We also had net financial expenses of 42 million, then we have a tax shield of 80 million on those. So the total cash consumption was 107 million. We have a very low net debt to the position, which is 0.15. We achieved another ROIC increase. Our ROIC reached 21.5% from 19.4% the previous year, and from 12.8% in 2012. So it's a really meaningful ROIC increase. If we break down by business, higher data Brazil has a ROIC of 21.3%, and 4Bio had a ROIC of 37.3%. So the point here is 4Bio is a very productive, very capital efficient format. So 4Bio can operate with lower margins, but that's the characteristics of the business, but still delivering tremendous ROIC. And finally, before passing, before Marcelo makes his consideration, we discuss the performance of our shares. I mean, if you look since the Brazil IPO, the equity market, the Bovespa index, increased by only 11% since 2007. I mean, this is a worrisome number, but we were able to deliver tremendous value, tremendous share appreciation in that process. So in this year alone, we generated a total shareholder return of 74%. For those investors who bought their shares in the Drogazil IPO in 2007, we have delivered 29.1% average total shareholder return per year. And for those who invested in the RIA IPO 2010, we have delivered 34.5% average total shareholder return ever since. I'll now pass to Marcelo, and then we'll come back to the Q&A.
Thank you, Eugenio. Let's go to page 18. In the page 18, I accomplished some points that we did in 2016, okay? The number one point is the organic growth. You know how important and how difficult to open store in the retail business. We did this constantly, in the long term. We open more or less 40, 50 stores every quarter. This is very, very important for us, and change the shape that we open the stores. Better than this, we follow all the projects in little days. We know how very well the results of all the new open, and never really get discussed about that, and learning about the mistakes, and learning about when we make a very, very good decision for us. The second point that we accomplished in 2015 is execution. We maintain the proper execution. Execution is really two main drivers here. The first one, the cart cycle, inventory cost, we reach the history in our record for us in both these two numbers. And we increase a lot also our process and human resources. Employee turnover, distribution curriculum, program and e-learning process, staffing time in the stores. All these things together, we achieve our record customer satisfaction level, our attendometer, our best number in the whole of our history. That shows us we maintain proper execution can help us for the future calls. We also consolidate new formats. We know how important for the consolidation is marketing and stand better than new formats. Then we develop a big store format in Avenida Paulista here in Brazil, in São Paulo area, and we open the store with 350 square meters. It's doing very, very well. We validate the final new format. And final new format is a format for a national sales for us. We need to grow this business in the future, but we are very, very confident in the business right now. and we need to start to remodelate the Drogasil model. We are since 2004 without doing any renovation in the Drogasil format. We opened two stores with this model, this new model for us. We are planning to roll out for next year. The other thing that helped us stop subscription is the Grenzone inventory with the forward buying. In this period, it's very, very important to be ready when the opportunity appears. The 7% of increase is a opportunity for us. We do this very, very well, and we use all this money not only for improving our profitability, but also to gain some market share. Let's go to page 19 to talk about the water strategy for 2016, okay? We did set a plan in 2014 about our strategic plan called the Projeto Norte, Go for the Future, okay? And these four pillars are keeping the same focus in these four pillars. After regular organic growth, we are planning to open 200 stores this year. Develop new formats, we are planning to roll out the big store formats, Farmaview and New Brasil, in 2017. When we talk about category management, we have accelerated the makeup business, which enhances the beauty business in the stores. And also we are doing, we start to a new platform for pricing that can help us to manage the pricing, the figures in our 1,400 stores around the country. But the most important thing in the strategic plan that the new Your Loyalty card that we are launching this year is also in Brazil and in Raya. We are planning to launch this during this year to be a completely revolutionary loyalty card similar to the Hungry Business Tesco in UK in the 90s. We are planning to spend the market share also, you know, the facility is very important for this game here. And the macroeconomic environment for 2010 should be difficult also. And we know how difficult it is for competition, then we'll be ready to, when the competition shows some weakness, we can reach and increase the market share in the markets, okay? We are very, very strong, we work very, very strong in 2015 and 2016 to prepare the company to dilute some expenses. We know in the accelerated environment of inflation helped us to do this better in 2017. Then we did a lot of projects, and you see some numbers in this year here. We did the automation, our number one DC in São Paulo, can help us also. We did all the rationalization for personal costs, we changed the staffing algorithm, all these kinds of projects can help us in this year. And the last plan for 2017 will be we are planning to a future transformation. After 5 years of the merger, we are now ready to talk about future, company future, okay? We did a deep investigation, both brands, what's the similarity about the two brands, was why you have this success. Since your early moments, we give up that last century. And we discovered the foundation of two brands with simple and similar purpose. We are doing for this year to engage in all the team to work with this person to take care of the people. We know this is very, very important to change it, to keep us more strong for the future in the company also. That goal can go to the Q&A with those engineers.
We're not ready for Q&A.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Miss Andriane Assis from Brasil Plural would like to pose a question.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking my follow-up question from the Portuguese call. I'd like to follow up on the potential growth of the market. We've seen in the past several years that the growth in drug consumption in Brazil or in sales has been extremely inelastic to GDP growth, right? But what we are seeing as we move along into 2017 is that volumes are lower, right? If I'm not mistaken, growing at around 4 to 5%, and we are looking forward to a lower price adjustment for the year. Do you think that there could be any potential downside to market growth because of lower average price increase in 2017? Is there any risk for that? That's one question. And the second question is regarding the potential cannibalization of the new stores, the new store openings on the existing store base. As we saw in 2016, the same store sales growth for the mature stores was healthy, above inflation, right? So do you guys expect any increased cannibalization going forward as you open more stores? And how would you deal with that in terms of not compromising the returns for the existing stores? That's my follow-up question. Thank you.
Guilherme, thank you for your question. I mean, market growth has been very constant. I mean, you look at the last 15, 20 years, it's been growing 12, 13% per year. It doesn't change much from one year to the other. And the funny thing is that it's almost a flat nominal number. So, for example, this year, the inflation, I think with the average of the year was something like 9, 12% or 13% of growth really means 4% real growth. So, I mean, the market showed some kind of reduction. So not a reduction, deceleration, when it came on real terms. I mean, and we are now getting to a year in which the economy is starting to improve. I think GDP is no longer declining, but we still won't see a lot of growth for the country as a whole. I mean, we have interest rates are lower, but still the consumer confidence is not there. Still, interest rates, even though they came lower, the spreads are very high, the banks are still very, the credit has been very tight. So, overall, when you look at the whole environment, I mean, it's not a recovery year. I think it's a year of bottoming up, maybe. Okay, we reached the bottom, now the economy will set up, and progressively we could reverse the trend. I mean, for us, I think the market will still grow 12-13%. And on our inflation-adjusted basis, I think this should be better than last year. But on a nominal basis, I think it's the same. And it's not easy to explain why the nominal number is always the same. It's also counterintuitive. But I think I couldn't see the market growing below double digits. I think we'll still do double digits even in a lower inflation year. In terms of the price cap increase, what happened is that for the last year, the price cap went up by 12%. And obviously, we had the inflationary gain of 12% because we passed the full price cap. But then what happened is that consumers started becoming more price sensitive because they tried to defend from this price increase. And retailers who had some extra fat in the system, because we all got a price increase higher than anyone expected, started promoting and started driving the prices down. So in the end, yes, price caps went up by 12, but the actual prices, they went up by 9, which was inflation. And likewise, history shows that in a year in which the price cap grows below inflation, discounts get reduced because every retailer has inflation pressures to take care. So I think the actual price increase, not the price cap increase, will be in line with inflation. So if that's the first part of your question. That in terms of cannibalization, I mean, obviously, an investment program like this, in which we open 200 stores, and 100 of those came in São Paulo, a market in which we already have 700, obviously cannibalization exists. And obviously, in an operation like São Paulo, cannibalization is very meaningful. The number that we post is an average number. So in São Paulo, as expected, the comps are below inflation because of cannibalization. But then we have very high comps in many different parts of the country, in the Northeast, in the Midwest, and so the comps overall were great. But what matters for us is not cannibalization. What matters is marginal aggregation in the new stores. Opening a store that will sell 600,000 a month with zero cannibalization is the same thing as opening a store that will sell 800,000 per month with 200,000 of cannibalization. So even though the comps in São Paulo make sense to some extent because of cannibalization, the new store, they start from a higher ground. So in terms of profitability, nothing happens. What matters is that our investment program delivers for each store the marginal revenue we need to pay the cost of capital, which in our case, the expected return is very high. So this is happening. We track stores very closely. We monitor our internal rate of return store by store, how it's doing, how it's progressing, where it didn't work and why it didn't work, where we have exceeded and why we have exceeded, can we do more of those? So we track that very well. And where we are now is that we just ended the development of the analytics to measure and predict cannibalization in a more accurate way. So now, once we open a new store, and after some period of the store working, we can see how much the store has stolen from other stores, how because of the CRM, because of the loyalty card, how much of the store sales is from existing customers who are now buying more because the store is more convenient, and how much is completely new marginal revenues, for example. And even how much new customers from this store may be spending in other stores, which is also a gain. So we can understand store by store how big the cannibalization is, where it came from, and we are now and we have a 1.0 version of our prediction model, so that when we analyze a new store, we have a pretty good idea what cannibalization will look like, and therefore how much total revenues the store must achieve to deliver the marginal revenue in the city.
And just to stress the point for Eugenio, cannibalization is a part of the game in a consolidation environment like this one. If you don't open the store, the competition will open the store. This is the point. Better to gain, just be for us, not for the competition.
Okay. I think that's clear. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Brandon.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan would like to pose a question.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I would like to continue exploring a little bit, as we did in the Brazilian conference call, the expense side of the equation. It seems that the company has been doing a good job. We acknowledge there are some like non-recurring effects here from like lower pre-operating expenses that we had this year versus the previous one, given the lower store opening. But I'd like to understand a little bit what's the potential of savings for the upcoming year. The company starts to revisit more its current plan, so basically lowering the headcount per store and also operating with a lower seniority level in terms of average employee per store. So that, if you can give like any visibility on this, would be great.
Joseph, thanks for the question. We have a ton of initiatives related to the expense side. Sometimes we are playing defense, sometimes we are playing offense. With labor expenses, we are mostly playing defense. We gained a lot of productivity. We improved stock processes. Employee turnover has come down. All these improvements, based on platform improvements, based on better trained employees because they stay for longer and so on, these affect how the store operates. So we also implemented a staffing algorithm to standardize and optimize staffing across stores. There were stores that were over-allocated with people. There were stores that were under-allocated with people. So we normalized that, and we operate at a slightly lower headcount than before. So this is very good. But the thing is, at the same time, there are pressures in several markets and things like pharmacy cost increase and some other things. And another thing is that with a lower employee turnover, what happens is that the average salary goes up. Because, I mean, for any level in the store, you have, let's say, a pharmacy clerk, you have A and B level. So when the turnover is high, your A guy doesn't get to B, and he leaves before that, and then the number gets promoted to B level. With lower employee turnover, the A gets to B before getting to store manager, for example. So we have a higher average cost per employee as a result of that. And not only we have reduced the headcount, but we have also optimized our career program and our salary grades. So a lot of positions, they now get an entry salary lower than before. So someone who is already at that salary, there's nothing much you can do, but the next guy to be promoted, let's say for store manager, assistant store manager, to be promoted with a lower salary. A pharmacist now is retained with a lower initial salary than before. And I won't give a lot of detail, but you can see in our non-recurring expenses, we have severance expenses related to accelerating some of those transitions. So we're doing a lot of things on the people side, but so far we have seen most as defense. I don't know if at some point the curve can shift and become an offense, something that can really dilute expenses from us. We have renegotiated rental contracts, for example, 10 of them, but because the AGPM is higher than inflation, we are seeing pressure in the rental side. When the AGPM comes down, and it will come down because the effect is stronger, because the inflation is lower, we could see some benefits on the rental side, maybe in the second semester. We are already seeing benefits from electricity costs. As the electricity production matrix switches back to hydroelectric rather than thermal electric, which is much more expensive, we are seeing a very meaningful expense dilution in power costs. So our power electricity costs escalated in the last few years. Now it's starting to come back. Obviously, we won't get to where it was before, but it's giving back some of that. So this is also helping. We have a lot of initiatives on our DCs. We invested, we pushed the envelope in terms of IT utilization in our main DC. Automation, process automation optimization in our main DC in São Paulo. So we have a new technology that we didn't have before that cuts a lot of labor, increase capacity, increase productivity, and so this will help. We have a specific process management, productivity process, driven by a consulting company named Falcone, which is taking place in all the DCs. So, I mean, we have renegotiated terms with acquirers. So there's a lot of things happening on the expense side. And next year, obviously, we will have a tough time in gross margins. Just because the inflationary gain on inventories will be much lower, we'll start from a gross margin 50 or 60 bits lower than next year, than previous year. Then, obviously, we can better negotiate terms, we can do things in pricing, and we will get back some of the difference. But the gross margin in the end will fall down, no doubt about it. Because our margin trend will be defined by how much we dilute on the expense side. So I think we have a real shot at dilution expenses this year, and that will be needed for us to defend our margins.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Marco Senna from Bradesco BBI would like to pose a question.
Hi guys, good morning all. I would like to make a question regarding Pharmazoo. You're always talking about it more and more and more about it. What do you guys think you're going to be able to explore deep the subject regarding a clear schedule of expenditure or even guidance?
Okay, thank you for the question, Marcos. The way we see technology, we worked for 4 years to finalize the format. We started with a certain design of how Fernandinho would operate. The initial numbers were not where we expected. We started changing a lot of elements of execution, things like compensation relating to generic penetration, including some front store sales in Brazil, slightly lower store size, and CapEx optimization. And as a result, after the 4 years, after doing a lot of things, the numbers we see today are very good numbers. So in our vision, the pilot is over. We have, for the good or for bad, we have a format. So what we will do now is we'll start expanding, but in a progressive way. So next year we open 3 stores. This year we'll do more than 3 stores. We still haven't set a guidance, but it could be 5, it could be 8, it could be 10, something like that. Next year, if the stores we open this year work, we go to the next step, and then the next, and then the next. So we are already in expansion mode. But it's still a careful expansion, because I would be lying if I told you that a format that has been around for 4 years gives us the same condition that as a format that has been around for 100 years, of which we have for 200 stores. So even if we believe it's done and it's good, it will be completely responsible for us. I'm not going into the point if we could or not do it, but if we set a 50-store guy opening guidance right now, even if you could do it, I don't know if you can do it, but probably you couldn't, but even let's assume we could. I mean, if it works, it's good, but let's imagine if it doesn't work, if there's something missing, or if you're not able to reproduce as you grow. You have a major, you have created a major problem in a company that doesn't need strength to do things. So we'll be gradual. We're already in expansion mode, but it's a controlled expansion mode. It's a closely monitored expansion mode.
Okay, thank you very much. And regarding to mature same-store sales, with the fast expected deceleration of inflation here in Brazil in 2017, do you think you're going to be capable of keep the same level of mature same-store sales above inflation?
Above inflation, I think so. At or above inflation, I think so. But nominally, the numbers will be different, obviously. Inflation is already falling down. In the first quarter, we have a very tough comp base because of the leap year and because the Zika virus peaked last year. So, and then the second quarter, the price increase, the cap will grow below inflation, and the actual prices we think will grow at inflation. So, we believe we'll be able to maintain something around inflation. It can always be sometimes slightly less, sometimes slightly more, but overall, this is our target.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
It appears to be no further questions. Now, I'll turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Okay, so just before concluding here, please put to page 20, just for us to highlight the IR calendar for this year. So in terms of earnings releases, the whole idea is to do our earnings in the end of the following month to the end of the quarter. So first quarter will be released on April 27th, second quarter July 27th, third quarter October 26th. We are already confirming 4 investor conferences to be held in the next month. So we'll be in February still at the BTG conference in São Paulo. I'm going to London, as Gabriel, March 13 and 14 to the Itaú Latam Consumer event. Then we'll have March 29 and 30 Merrill Lynch conference in São Paulo, and April 4th and 5th Brazil Investment Forum of Bradesco, also held here in São Paulo. And now to the final remarks to this call. So, I mean, from any perspective we look, 2016 was an amazing year in which we have set many, many different records. So we achieved record revenue growth, record market share growth, record margins, record life for the company. And I think this stems from a combination of 3 factors. just resilient demand. We are in a sector that is virtually inelastic. This is a sector that has proven itself time and time again in several different economic cycles. So the demand is basically there. So this is something very important. And this is amazing, but it's not exclusive to us. This is for the whole market. Our competitors will also take advantage of this resilient demand. Then we get to the company-specific factors. First, a very strong balance sheet. We are in an economic environment in which interest has been very high. The basic interest rates have been very high. They were 14%, now they're coming down. The spread was still very high. The credit market was very tight. And we have insulated ourselves from this overdue deal with a strong balance sheet. We don't need much debt to operate. We don't pay much interest because our leverage is very low. So we are in our own world here. We only depend on our own capacity to generate cash and to deploy the cash with the returns we expect. So the strong balance sheet has been amazing for us. While a lot of competitors, they have struggled because of high leverage, paying huge interest, this affects the business. The services, the stockouts will get up because people have to save on working capital. They fire people from the stores, so the service level drops also. There are a lot of competitors in that situation. Obviously, not number two, not number three, which is doing well, but a lot of middle-sized companies in some level of stress, sometimes high stress, sometimes the stress, but this has been a source of competitive advantage for us without any shadow of doubt. And then the third aspect is execution. Our execution has been very consistent. It has been improved. So from any angle we look, and we are a much better company now than we were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years before. We achieved this year, for example, something, I don't think it's an overstatement if I call it a supply chain revolution. In the last 3, 4 years, stockouts, cash cycle, and inventory losses, which are mutually offsetting variables, they all went down in the same direction. Because generally, if a company wants to reduce stockouts, they add inventories, cash cycle goes up. In 2 years, when they start expiring, inventory losses skyrocket. This is how retailers get benefits. All situations, they pass through an imbalance here between stockouts, cash cycle, and inventory losses. We reduce all the three in a meaningful way at the same time is something very, very meaningful and very, very difficult to do. But because our platforms have been improving, our processes have been improving, the assumptions that go in our proprietary system to calculate inventories, they have been fine-tuned. So this is something amazing, absolutely transformational for us. We have also reduced tremendously employee turnover. So our staff at the store is now more experienced than before. This translates to a higher service level to the consumer. We are retaining a bigger number of candidates for managing position. Our store managers will be better than before. They will be more tenured than before. And we have advanced in all our core strategies. Marcelo has covered that in detail. Looking ahead, looking at 2017, 2018 will be a challenging year. And there's no doubt about that. Already in the first quarter, we have a high comp base because of the Zika last year and because of the leap year. We have one last day of sales versus the previous year. Second quarter and third quarter, we have a much lower inflationary gain and inventories gain than we had last year. So, for us, what this means is a huge focus on productivity, a huge focus on rationalizing expenses, and we have also remembered that. However, this year's number compared to last year's number, let's not lose sight of the long term here, because last year was an amazing year. Even if this year is not at the same level, I'm not saying it to be, we'll have to see how the year plays out, But if you compare 2017, 2015, 14, 13, 12, 11, I'm sure this is a great year. But let's assume we have something very specific that doesn't repeat itself again. So we shouldn't lose sight of the long term here. And a final consideration here, I already talked about ailing competitors. Consolidation is a resilience game. It's a long-term game. We will still see a tough economy. Interests are down. The inflation is down. But the spreads are high. The credit is tight. All the major banks, they have huge areas of what they call special situations, which is basically fixing the lending space and minimizing the losses they have already booked in their balance sheets. So there won't be an easy life for any leverage company in Brazil. We have a ton of those companies. And whenever our competitors flounder, we'll be there and we'll make strides in market share. And we saw this happening this year in Sao Paulo with competitors who closed stores. We saw that in the Midwest with a company in Chapter 11. We saw that in Brazil Fund all over the country. And I mean, I'm sure we'll see companies suffering this year. I'm sure we'll see opportunities. Mostly middle-sized companies trying to do roll-ups or trying to do M&As and integrating businesses that are very different in a sector they don't necessarily understand well. So the opportunities will be on the table. And it depends on us on taking advantage and advancing our market share position and creating value for our shareholders. Finally, I would like to thank you all for your ongoing support. We are very proud that we have so many shareholders who have been around since our either the high or the Brasil IPO, who have been very constant in the good and in the bad times. Their patience was tested in 2011, 2013, but eventually the company got on track and we have been able to deliver a lot of value, and we think there's a ton of value ahead of us to be delivered. So thank you very much and have a great 2017.
Thank you. Hi, Brasil's conference call is finished. Have a nice day.